on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is June 12th, 2015. Appreciate you being with me. Our phone is open right now for any live calls that you might want to make. Any questions you want to make live, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, we're live. Whether you're listening on the radio or podcast, we're here to help with any money matters in any way we can. 888-99-CHART is the number you can call right now. 888-992-4278. Matter of fact, you can call anytime you want. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But we're live right now. Also, you can reach us via Twitter. At KPP Financial, that's our Twitter ID, or you can get a note directly to me by clicking on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. This being Friday, I'd like to give you a sampling of our weekly premium newsletter. It comes out every Friday. Usually, I've noticed that I work on it before the market opens, and I'm usually done with it by around when the market opens, or within an hour or so. And it's out usually before the afternoon to everybody. But now, on the newsletter itself, I always start off with the same thing, a summary of the week, a market commentary, a summary of the economic news came out that week, and some of the things that impacted the market. And I said, as the market has been rising out of the ashes of the 2000 recession, the market is sheer, the bull market phase is clearly showing its age. For all of 2015, the S&P 500 has gone nowhere, sideways. And I try to give you some insight on the conditions which caused that. Why is that happening? What's going on that make the market not move up or down? Why isn't it going either direction? So that's what the first section is. And I always, in that first section, give a little hint as what we think you should do. Remember, I have our clients come first, so that newsletter goes out to all our clients plus those people who subscribe. And also for everybody else in that newsletter, I always give a couple stock ideas on the stock idea selection. Two stocks this week. Usually it's two stocks or two issues, two equities of some kind every week. Portfolio management section addressed the important aspect of decision making. This week I talked about reinvesting dividends, you know, and you got to figure out cost basis about those things. But and finally, the consumer watch section, I try to point it out to how you could save money or at least avoid losing any that you don't have to. This week we talked about budgeting tools, a couple of internet web budgeting tools that you might want to check out. And you can try our newsletter for a month, everybody. It's worth your time to subscribe. Just go to investtalk.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page. It's $9.95 a month, something like that. And it comes out every Friday. So give me a call. We're here to help you right now. This is the hour that we're live and can be interactive with you. Let's get your voice on the program. We'll take a question now from our 24-hour listen line. This one came in after our last program, 888-99-CHART, and the question came between programs.
Hi, guys. This is Scott from Denver. I listen to you guys every day on the podcast. Appreciate everything you guys do. I had a specific question about a stock, Atrion, A-T-R-I. It's a little bit of an expensive stock. I bought into it a few days ago, and I was just trying to figure out what your guys' outlook on it was, whether that was a good buy or not, and what the future is for this stock. Thank you very much.
This is a very small cap. It's a $717 million stock, so it's really small, called Atrion Corporation, ATRI, develops ophthalmology and cardiovascular fluid delivery and other medical and non-medical products. It makes money, which is really good. Small caps tend to lose money for a number of years until they get bigger. They burn money. But this one isn't. It's growing its sales and growing its earnings. And therefore, it's also selling at a premium, as he pointed out. It's a little bit expensive. It is. A little bit expensive. they're going to make their sales growth is surprisingly only in the 5 to 9% per quarter sales growth. So it's not huge growth. And the P/E ratio is 26. The five-year range of P/E is 13 to 27. Good return on equity at 19%. Management owns 23% of the company. Mutual funds are slowly buying over the last year. And they do pay a tiny dividend. I like the company. It was trading sideways for quite some time. I mean, we're talking a year plus trading sideways. And just back in May, it started to pop up. So it's now, and just so you know, it's $385 a share. So they've never split. It's only 1.8 million shares outstanding. So they've never split to produce more shares and cut the price down to attract more buyers. They're apparently not interested in that, which I think is, you know, not a bad thing. I kind of think that's a good thing. So it's a good, solid company. Don't expect miracles, because unless I can get more into it to find out how it's going to grow or increase its growth, it doesn't really deserve a 26 P/E ratio, because it's not growing more than 8-9% in sales a quarter. That's pretty slow growth. So there's got to be a growth driver for me to be attracted to this stock. Okay, and they only trade average 11,000 shares a day. So it's not very liquid because of that high price. That's Atrion Corporation. By the way, all stocks are like that. The price gets really high, liquidity kind of dries up a little bit because there's not a lot of people that have that much that they want to trade in one stock. So that's good and bad. Good that, you know, you don't want a lot of trading going on simply because people should be buying holders if they're buying a good, solid company, not trading it around. Bad is that it's going to be difficult to exit. Might be illiquid if you own too many shares. 10 ways index funds can save your retirement. Well, I was reading it. We'll talk about what those 10 ways are. Some of them are very, very true. And some of them are, you know, it's an opinion, but we'll talk about it. That's going to be our main talking point. I'm also going to talk about the bond and stock divergence, bond prices and stock prices, the divergence that's going on. What does that mean when it diverges from each other? In other words, prices of stock is not going the same direction as the bonds. Surprisingly, it does not mean stocks are rising and bonds are falling. Divergence means they're just going in different directions, or one is veering off from the other. So we're going to discuss what it means when bonds diverge from stocks or vice versa. And something we haven't talked about in a long time, housing. The millions of home mortgages that are still underwater. No one talks about it anymore. And there's reasons why they don't. But there's still a lot that the house is worth less than the debt. And managing cash in your retirement. Some things to consider when managing cash in retirement. Things that you should do. Things that you should at least understand to try to preserve or manage that cash as you withdraw and spend it in retirement. And if we get to it, I want to still talk about the Greek negotiations that have stalled. And I think that's part of the reason why the market is more volatile this week. I thought the market would end the week on the up note because, you know, we had a big day on, Thursday and a little bit of fall through yesterday. But today it gave back almost all 140 points on the Dow down. So as you look at it, it looks like it just almost flat for the week for the S&P 500. The S&P 500 was down 15, the NASDAQ down 31 today. So the market was weak today. Why? Well, there wasn't anything in the news other than a little bit more worry about the Greek debt. And there's a Federal Reserve meeting next week. Did you remember that? I'm sure everybody's anticipating what the Fed might say coming out of that meeting. Maybe that's why the market's not too concerned. Again, the market's, you can't get, I looked at it today. I think there's, on the S&P 500, for the peak that it made in at the very end of December, almost the second last day of this December, that peak till today, we're up from 2009, it was at 2090 in December. Today it's 2094 on the S&P 500 on a close. 4 points up. Yay, it's still in the up mood. I mean, you can't get much flatter than that. If you have any return at all in your portfolio, you should count your blessings, because the market is not giving anybody anything. If you're an indexer, you've done nothing. You've got nothing so far. But I'll tell you this, the NASDAQ is a little bit better. The NASDAQ is a little bit better than that. The S&P, which is the broader market, is worse, obviously. And then you go to the Dow Jones 30, and the Dow Jones 30 is worse, because it's down. So it depends on where you are, where you have put yourself in the market. If you have a good diversified portfolio, you're pretty flat. That's the market. Check out our info sheet on diversification. We also have a list of dividend-paying ETFs. You can have access to these and more when you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. And you can do that at InvestTalk.com. That's with two T's, InvestTalk.com. It's free, and it's pretty easy to do. And use our free listener line right now if you want. Try and give me a call and ask your money questions. I'll do my best to help you. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Gene in beautiful North Carolina. I have never been to North Carolina, but I have friends who live there, and they say it's spectacular. Is that
Thanks
true?
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Gene. Appreciate it.
Question is, if you have a thinly traded stock, let's say under 100,000 shares per day, what are the chances that if you tried to get a price quote from two discount brokers that the prices are pretty much the same? Is there a wide variation?
The less liquid it is, the less likely you'll get they'll be the same. And it is fairly wide. It's in today's market where it's electronic trading and not a broker out there, a floor broker or whatever. The spread between the bid and ask is much thinner. But with a very illiquid stock, that spread widens dramatically. And just so you know, Gene, and for everybody else, when the market starts to fall sharply and everybody wants to get out because they want to protect their profits, your spread on very illiquid stocks gets extremely wide, and you can't get out. There's times you just can't get out.
Right, right. I'm wondering just, you know, if people try and use a discount broker just to lower the commission, is there in general more of a bias that you get a worse price for illiquid stocks, or does it not matter?
Well, if you put in a market order, you will get a worse price the more illiquid the price of the stock is, not necessarily a discount broker versus a regular broker, because as I said, it's mostly electronic to trading the trades.
So if you put in a limit order, you wait for it. If it does execute, is it less? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is there any downside in, if you're just interested in trading and not services from a discount broker, is there any downside in the price you can get executed at any given time from a discount broker versus a more full service broker?
The answer would be no, as long as it's traded on a major exchange, New York or NASDAQ. It's not a pink sheeted item. It's not a foreign stock traded on a foreign desk, because that's all different. But if there is no difference between a discount broker and a regular broker if it's a New York or NASDAQ listed stock. Gene, appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. If you'd like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to InvestTalk, the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com. Yesterday I mentioned our balanced income portfolio, a program. Also, take a look at the select growth. They're all there. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the phones, waiting for your call. 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. It's not just about numbers. To make a real comparison, you have to dig deeper. How to measure performance. That's a key topic on Monday, June 15th. We hope you'll join us then for InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. Give me a call. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. I want to talk about Walmart. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Oh, no problem. I just wanted to see if it's a good time to pick up Walmart at this time.
Well,
I saw it bumped up yesterday, but I don't know about today.
It was down today a little less than 0.5%. It's a 72.43. It's fallen from $90 at the very end of the year or beginning of the year down to 72. And it's right at between 70 and 75. Art is a lot of support. It shouldn't go much further down, and it has been falling for several months, slowly falling ever since the beginning of the year, but I think it's really close to finding support. And of course, if the market corrects, it'll go down further, but I think if it does correct and it go down further, Art, that seems like a really good buying opportunity, and it's right at the price where you want to buy it. You might want to wait until it picks up a little strength, maybe bumping up above 74 or so, and before you buy it, because you'd like to see some strength come into it, but it's not really showing any yet.
Okay. Yeah, because I was actually trying to wait for the I'm expecting some type of a correction between now and the end of the summer, so.
I would think so.
I was just wondering.
I think that'd be a great time to pick it up if you get it. I really do. Walmart.
Yeah.
WMT, everybody knows who Walmart is. That's why I didn't talk about the numbers. Their growth is pretty low because it's so huge. Their earnings are going to be up 5% next year after being down 5% this year. Big dividend at 2.7%, and they don't pay a lot out in dividend because the cash flow is $8 a share, and they don't pay much out in the dividend. I mean, the dividend is, you know, we're talking about, you know, $1.40, and they have an $8 cash flow. They don't. They make $5 a share and they only pay $1.40. So they got lots of room to increase dividends, which all sounds pretty good. Let's go to Gilberto in San Jose. How are you doing, Gilberto?
Hi. I would like to ask about Chevron CDX.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
I know it's down today and I don't know if it's the right time to buy.
I think it's getting very, very close. The story is similar to Walmart. Chevron, ExxonMobil, all those big oil companies have fallen because oil prices fell. And it looks like the story being similar to Walmart, meaning that Chevron is right at where it's traded before, and it's always bounced from. So it's always bounced up from this point. Doesn't mean it will again, but it's done it three or four times in recent years. And if you go to a longer term, it looks like this is about the price you want to buy it, right around $99 to $100 a share. And they're going to make $6.24 next year after making only $3.90 this year. So that means that's going to be about a 10 PE. It's going to be about a 15 PE or so. And I think that's a pretty good price. And it pays a 4.3% dividends. So, Gilberto, I kind of like it in this price, but you might want to wait to see some strength come into it. In other words, it starts to go up a few days in a row before you buy it. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That's Chevron, CVX. I love those big integrated oil companies because oil prices have stabilized. That's good. Let's go to Sonny in San Jose. He wants to talk about 401k. Listening to us on a streaming broadcast on investtalk.com. Thank you for calling, Sonny. I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking my call, Steve. I have a question that I had my previous employer 401k where I was working for before.
Mm-hmm.
And now I actually changed my employment to the new employer.
Right.
So I was wondering, I have a 401k. It was also in a self-directed 401k account.
Uh-huh.
So is it better to roll over to IRA or maybe even to Roth?
I've always thought it was better to roll it into a 401k, but these are your choices, Sonny. You can roll the old 401k into your new 401k at your new employer. You can do that. But you'll still be subject to all the choices that's offered in the 401k. If the choices are very varied and across a lot of sectors and you get a lot of choices, well, that's that makes me feel better that you could just leave it in the 401k. But generally, they're not that way. And generally, I suggest to people to roll it into an IRA so that you can have complete control of what you want to invest it in instead of being subject to, you know, target-dated funds or just the 5 or 6 mutual funds they offer. Because many times, those mutual funds and target-dated funds are not the best. So it's always depends on your company. But I would always... almost always roll it over to an IRA so you can buy what you want.
Okay, so will it call me a rollover self-directed IRA account? Will it?
Yes, it's called a rollover IRA. You can open self-directed. You can open up with any brokerage firm, Schwab, TD Ameriprise, anywhere. You can, and then you can even hire a manager if you wanted to. If you didn't want to manage yourself, you have the ability to hire a manager. Most 401ks, you don't have that choice. I just like the unlimited choices you have, Sonny, when you roll it into an IRA. I just like that. Okay?
Okay. So the question is, can you actually, let's say you have 100K, you can actually divide into 2 different brokers?
Yeah. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can divide it to 4, 5, 10. You can do whatever you want. That's, again, freedom. I like the freedom. Okay, we want to talk about some ways index investing can help save your retirement. And there are, you know, there's benefits about index. You'll never hear me say anything bad about indexing. You won't hear me say that. That's not who I am, not who I like to talk about. One of the things I like about indexing is it's cheap. You don't, there's no trading costs, there's not a lot of activity, you just index, you just buy and hold. So there's good reasons to have an index. There's some good solid reasons that they are better than many others. There's just one of them is that they're not actively traded, moved around, therefore increasing costs, trading costs, and something like that. And when you index, even if you use a mutual fund or ETF, they're very low cost. Okay, so those are things that are good. There's an article I'm referring to on our website. You can read it. I don't want to go through all 10. I will say this though: there is a big flaw in indexing that most people, and when you hear about the news, they talk about how good it is. They don't talk about it. And one is there's absolutely no defensiveness in indexing. There's no way to be defensive. And, for instance, if in a money manager situation, the money manager can, like, go produce some cash or put on some hedges so if they're worried about the market being overextended to protect against the downside. And indexing doesn't do that. And that's fine as long as you just hold it and keep buying it and don't think about it for years and years and years. You got to have a very long perspective on indexing. Think about it this way: from 2000 to 2015, the Nasdaq. If you indexed in the Nasdaq, you would have not made one dime, almost for 14 plus years. But if you stay with it, you'll make plenty of money. But it's got to be long periods of time. A money manager or an actively managed account can be defensive, and that sometimes is very good. And one more thing. Is most people think that they are buying holders, that they'll do it. As long as there's a bull market, everybody just stays with the market. They're very confident that they'll just stay with it. But most people, more than 50%, get out when the market is at the bottom. They finally get out scared, get tired of losing money, and get out. They can't handle it anymore, and that's the absolute worst thing you can do. And this has been proven over and over and over that's what people do, especially through their 401ks. They get out at the bottom. They get back in near the top. They get back out at the top. And they prove this by performance of 401ks, people's performance. So I do like indexing. I think it's a great way to invest, but you have to have a long-term perspective. And not everybody says they do when the market's in a bull market phase. But when it doesn't, when it's in a bear market phase, people don't want to stick with the indexing. And that's when you should be buying more, not selling. Buy more of the index when the market is crashed. How do you think Warren Buffett does so well over the years? He keeps buying. He has, of course, a money machine called insurance companies that keeps flooding him with money. And when the market gets cheap, he invests all that money. That's how he does it. He's done a very good job at it. It's always nice if you have more money coming in. Yeah, that's always nice. Job number one on Invest Talk is answering your questions. Our 24-hour listening line is always open for any money question you might have. And I've got some background in insurance. You got an insurance question? I can answer those kinds of questions. I bought and sold real estate over the years. So anything I can help you with, I'll be happy to do. And here's the number, 888-99-CHART.
I'm looking into getting into stocks. I've never played before. I've never invested. And I'm wondering if you have any tips or pointers where I should get started and what I should do. Thank you.
Most time when I talk to beginners, I say start with the indexes we just talked about. Start there because it's a learning process. Many people are anxious. I want to buy Disney. I want to buy XYZ company. They have something coming up. And they get all excited buying an individual stock, and it's not a good way to get started. It is not, because you're putting all your money in one stock or just one or two stocks. You don't know really why you bought it. You just like the company. You don't know anything fundamentals, technicals. You don't know what's going on. You just like it. Well, you like it because you heard somebody else say they liked it. And that's usually not a good recipe for buying stocks. So I always suggest, well, why don't you start with indexing? The NASDAQ, the S&P 500, Russell 2000. There's a lot of indexes. And then start learning how stocks work, learning what drives markets, what drives stock prices, what are the fundamentals mean. That's how you have to kind of, it's a learning process. You start reading about it. But if you don't want to be part of that process, then stick with indexing or hire somebody else to invest for you. But usually when you start off, you don't have a lot of money, so the wiser thing is to stick with buying an index mutual fund or an ETF. And I would suggest, if you absolutely have no idea, use the SPY with the S&P 500, that's the ETF, or the QQQ with the NASDAQ 100. The NASDAQ 100 is a little higher growth than the S&P. The S&P 500 is more broad. And do that. That's what I would suggest. Okay? Okay, it's time for Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money choices that can have a lasting impact on your finances. Before you buy online, exercise some common sense. Okay, if you have concerns about the website you're using, don't buy online. Don't enter your credit card details. Don't do all that. Don't. If you're concerned with the website. If you're using a public computer, the library, everything else, my suggestion is not to buy anything online because you don't know how secure that is. Now, most major credit card companies now have secure online systems that can give you some additional protection. And the way that works, before you make the transaction, you have to go through a little additional password protection on the credit card you're using. And it's not a bad idea. You know, so you may want to set that up. And if you're using public computer, again, I would not suggest you buy things online using that. And one more thing, keep a record of the phone number and street address of the seller of whatever you're buying in case there is a problem with your purchase or bill. If you can't find, you may want to find them. You may want to look elsewhere. You got to be careful. Now, I'm not talking about Amazon, and I'm not talking about Walmart, you know, online buying. Those are pretty safe places to buy, even though, of course, there's data breaches, as we all know. But as far as paying for something, not having your credit card stolen too easily, and actually get the product you pay for, you know, you'll get it for those big places. I'm talking about smaller places that maybe, you know, they have a smaller presence. You got to be a little bit more careful. But that's Invest Talk Personal. If there's a topic you want me to talk about, just get in touch. You can click on, you can call 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Me on InvestTalk.com.
Life insurance, it can be complicated. Understanding life insurance is one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access to these info sheets and much more. Sign up now. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Being a day trader, I'm wondering, aside from just having a lot of money in your account, aside from having not investing the full 100%, There are times where I do invest my portfolio 100%. How do you avoid being selling a stock and then having to wait 3 days for it to settle before you can turn around and actually maybe repurchase the same stock? Is there something I'm missing there, and that way I won't be in violation of good faith, aside from just having a lot of money that I'm not investing? Is there another way as a day trader that I can avoid these violations? Appreciate your answer. Look forward to hearing it, and love your show. Thank you.
So what he's talking about is when you buy a stock, there's 3 days clearing, that's called, 3 days to clear. They got 3 days to clear the stock. And that means for the transaction to actually complete, they, meaning the brokerage firm you're using, TD Ameritrade, or wherever, JP Morgan, they get 3 days to clear the trade. While it's clearing those 3 days, you don't get to use the money again because it's not finished the purchase. It's like you bought something, but you haven't really paid for it for 3 days. Now, this is a rule that's pretty old. In the older days, that took that long for it to clear. Now they clear instantaneously, but that rule hasn't changed. It hasn't caught up with the modern times and the speed of computers. But, so what he's saying is, if I have $100,000 and I'm day trading, I buy $100,000 stock today, worth of stock today, and then I sell that same $100,000 by the end of the day. So now I don't own it. But now I got to wait 3 days for it to be access to my money. Is there any way I can avoid that waiting period? And the answer is no. No. You can contact your brokerage firm. They might let you go on margin for some of the money that you have, but that means you're borrowing money and you're paying interest, and I don't recommend that at all. So I don't think there's any way you can avoid it. I don't think there is. I really don't. So as a day trader, you got to deal with those issues. I hope everybody understood that you know, when you buy something, it takes 3 days to clear. And sometimes this is very confusing, especially at the end of the year. Let's say you bought a stock on December 31st. It won't clear until January 3rd and a whole new year. So your tax situation, do you own it? Did you own that thing? Let's say you sold the stock on December 31st. It clears on January 3rd. When is your, do you pay in the capital gains in the following year or the year that you sold it? And your records are not showing on December 31st, the end of the, it shows you that the stock is still owned even though you sold it because the trade hasn't cleared. You see how it can get messy, these clearing dates? It's sometimes a mess. Sanjay called from Palo Alto. He wanted me to talk about a particular stock. Who is that? BWLD is the symbol. Buffalo Wild Wings. Oh, okay. Wasn't there big news out today about Buffalo Wild Wings, and that's probably why he called. I'm going to put it over here on the chart. Yeah, it was up almost $5 today to $160 a share. So they had some news out today, and I didn't quite... What was it? Wingsource 60% W. Our model is completely different from Buffalo Wild Wings. So Wingstop came, that's why. Wingstop came out and was 60% up on its IPO today, Wingstop. And of course, they're telling you they're different from Buffalo Wild Wings. But Buffalo Wild Wings went up in sympathy, up a... $4.96 to $160. Buffalo Wild Wings is actually a pretty good growing company. I mean, they're growing 20% sales a quarter. They operate 1,082 quick casual restaurants in the U.S. and Canada with plans to open 112 more this year. That's in 2015. Acquired majority stake in Rusty Taco Inc., a Texas-based fast casual restaurant. Not that long ago. They're going to make $5.84 a share this year, $7 a share. That's 18-20% more. And it's a 31 PE because it's growing so fast. Not bad. It's a good company. And it pulled back. It was at 190 and a few months ago. Now it pulled back to 149. Today it's at 160. And so it's starting to come back. So on a chart, it looks like it's starting to recover from some weakness, and I kind of fundamentally it looks great. It's just expensive. They don't have any debt, which is good. Return on equity is 18%. I mean, and it's a $3 billion company. It's not small. I like it, but I just to know that you're paying up for it. Okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Bonds and stock, bond prices and stock prices are diverging, meaning bonds are going down and stocks are going sideways. That divergence has been going on recently at a much stronger rate. But it has happened over the last year, this divergence. Why is this important? Because usually if the bond market falls or the bond market goes up, the stock market follows. It's common that the stock market falls. So it's suggesting that we're in for a correction based on this. As and also to support that, the stocks are, there's fewer and fewer stocks hitting new highs and fewer above the 200-day moving average. That's usually an indication of a correction that's coming. But one of the things that the market does is tries to embarrass the most people it can. And a lot of people have been talking about correction, including myself. And when that happens, if too many people are talking about it, it won't happen. Because it's already built in. Everybody's already taken action to weather the correction. Well, if you've already taken action, how's the correction going to happen? That's the thinking anyway. It's a contrarian thought process. But a lot of people think we are in for a correction. I am in that group that we are way overdue for a correction. But I'm also staying with the market because I don't want to be trying to time that correction. At the same time, I do have a few defensive positions in just in case. So I have reacted to the correction that should come. So am I part of the crowd that already reacted? Kind of interesting, huh? How's this work? That's why it's so difficult. Now it's time to get your question in before the end of the hour. We're almost done. We have the last segment coming up. 888-99-CHART. You can reach me right now. Any money question is a good question. Dennis in Dublin has a question. And then we'll take one from you, hopefully. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. This is one of the few podcasts that invite your participation, your voice. Have a conversation about your money issues with a financial advisor. The podcast is produced live every weekday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. The number is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Dennis in Dublin. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing good, Steve. Enjoy your show. Listen to it every day on my way home from work.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, I got a quick question for you, and that is regarding dividend reinvestment.
Yes.
And the question involved in that is that I currently have it set up where my it's my settlement fund, and I do have my ETFs, and then my dividends, how I have that set up is that the fractional parts every time that they're, is that I go back and I buy a fractional part of the ETF that I'm in.
Right.
My question to you, and that is I've been told that, you know what, keep it that way, have it set it so that it reinvests into those fractional parts so that when you go through the year, it automatically is buying the fractional parts low or whatever else, getting that rather than having to put it into your settlement fund. And right. That is my question to you. Is it best to go ahead and have the monies reinvested and put it go into your settlement fund and buy them on your own, or is it just to have them automatically reinvested?
Okay, there really is no difference as far as what would be better or worse, except when it comes to taxes. If you're doing it in an IRA, it really doesn't matter, okay? Let's say you're doing it outside of IRA, Dennis. You have to keep track of your cost basis of every fractional share. So when you do sell someday, you got to figure out what your cost basis is for all the sales and fractions that you bought it and all the different prices. That's what you're supposed to do anyways, is keep track. Now, that may, the law changed a couple of years ago where the custodian, whoever has your money, is supposed to keep track of that. So hopefully they'll do that for you, and then it won't really matter that you have to keep track. But in the old days, just a few years ago, it was your responsibility to keep track of your cost basis of all fractional shares. Now I believe that all the custodians have to keep track of that. But really, there's no better or worse way to do it. I mean, I think the way you set it up currently is probably a pretty good way to do it. You always buy shares no matter what the price is. It could be low, it could be high, but at least, you know, your dollar cost averaging on your fractional shares. There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, okay, great. Would I have time to go in and squeeze in one more quick question
sure.
for you?
Sure.
Okay. The other question I have for you, and that is in regards to a 10-year window that I have between now and when I have to do my RMD.
Okay.
And what I'm looking at, and that is that I currently have the fund, it's managed by a CFP. Okay. And the question I wanted to do is I'm throwing this question at you because I want to hear your feedback, and I'm going to go ahead and ask him.
Okay.
But what I'm going to be doing is that when I hit 70, I went and I looked it up, and then when I go ahead and required to do that requirement of distribution at 70, I'm automatically going to be now in a higher tax bracket because of the amount of money that I'm going to be pulling out is going to put me into one. So the question I have is that should I have that set up where it's currently in a traditional Roth, should I slowly more or less start to take monies and have those put into a Roth IRA so that when I do have the money that are taken out, it will not be then put me into another tax bracket? Does that make sense? I'm asking that question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it makes perfect sense. That's one of the reasons why I do like having both a Roth IRA and a regular IRA or 401k, Roth or regular, so that you can manage the withdrawals and not get penalty. But remember, whatever's in your IRA, 401k IRA, you know, you're going to have that required minimum distribution, but also you have, of course, Social Security income as well. So it is good. Yeah, if you're in a lower tax bracket now, then it is a good, it is a pretty good argument to slowly take a little bit out and put it in a Roth. Take, you know, and I like that argument a lot, actually.
Oh, so that is a good idea because it's going to be, and that is that with the government, either you pay me now or you pay me later, yeah. But you're going to pay me.
You're going to pay them. That's so, right. That's right. So you just try to pay them as little as possible. Thanks for the call. Thanks, Dennis. It's time to wrap it up for the day, everybody. A reminder that I will be in San Ramon and San Jose next week for individual portfolio reviews. I do have one opening on Wednesday, the 17th in San Jose. So if you'd like to reserve that hour, just go to investtalk.com and click on make an appointment. And I'm up there quite often, so if you still want to meet with me in San Ramon, I'll set up another time to be up there. Not too distant in the future. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial. We all want to thank you for listening, and we hope you have a good weekend. And let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.